Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to, well, good afternoon. I'm sorry, I should say good afternoon and welcome to a special edition of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keyes, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Also, I'm not sure if you realize you can download the shows from iTunes. So just look up Joy Keyes or look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, and they're all there free. You don't have to pay for them. You can download them right there onto your iPhone or iPod. This morning, I have a wonderful, well, this afternoon, I keep saying morning because I'm usually in the morning, but it's morning to her. She's not on the East Coast, so it's morning to her. But I have a wonderful guest this morning. She's been on the show before talking about her book, One Big Happy Family. This is Rebecca Walker. She's an award-winning author and lecturer. She's the author of the memoir Black, White, and Jewish and Baby Love and the editor of the anthologies To Be Real, What Makes a Man, and One Big Happy Family. Her writings have appeared in Book Forum, Newsweek, Glamour, Marie Claire, The Washington Post, Vibe, and Interview, just to name a few. But today we're talking about Black Cool, 1,000 Streams of Blackness. Good morning, good afternoon,
good morning.
Evening, everybody.
I'm happy to be here, Joy. It's good to hear you again. Hello, East
yes.
Coast folks. Sorry I'm throwing off your whole time thing, but I'm here in L.A., so we're making it work as we can.
Yeah, well, it was really early for my other guest. He had called in. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning for him. But I have listeners overseas in South Africa, and it's evening, and in Europe it's evening there. So to you guys, good evening. But just welcome, and thank you for listening. And Rebecca, again, welcome, and thank you for being on the show again. This is your second time, so I'm truly blessed to have that happen 2 times.
Thank you.
I want to read from your book.
Okay.
You're welcome. I want to read a little from your book, Black Cool, 1,000 Streams of Blackness. I'll be giving away some copies of these, so if you're listening, you want to follow on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. One of the essays, it's a collection of essays from different people that you know and got them to speak about Black Cool and what it means to them and their experience with it and being Black Cool and so on and so forth. One of the writers is Michaela Angela Davis, and her piece is called Resistance. I have to tell you, I was exhausted after reading her piece. She was on fire. Fire. She was not on fire. She was on fire in this piece, okay? And I was like, whoa, okay, slow down. But it was a great piece, one of the many great pieces in the book. But I want to read a little bit from her piece. She starts, well, this is in the middle of it. I'm not going to praise how B-girls and round-the-way boys are beginning and never-ending superheroes of fashion and youth-style culture. I'm not even going to get down with the optimism, energy, and cool commerce the hip-hop generation brought to the entire fashion universe, how hip-hop style is something like a phenomenon, and how poor Black and Latino kids created a fashion revolution that rocks around the world. I'm not going to write about how door knocker earrings knocked the cameo out the great American jewelry box, or about how hip-hop style is like Michael Jackson spanning generations because its innovation was fresh enough to outlive its originators. I won't tell the famous tale about how former hustlers made diamonds okay for the day and denim for the night, enough to make Jackie O clutch the pearl that everyone placed their This Is High American Style money on, and blew it because jeans and sneakers last longer and penetrate real people deeper than any pillow, hat, white gloves ever could. Black style is not elitist, it's genius.
Woo! Oh, my God.
Michaela. Right?
She killed it.
Dang,
oh, I love that
dang.
Piece. It's one of my
can
favorite
pieces.
Throw
the book down. So what are your favorite pieces in there? Or
yeah, that's, I mean, I love all the pieces. I love all the writers. I love all the pieces. But I have to be honest, when Michaela sent that in, after I'd been like, I need your piece, and she sent that, I had one of those moments of, you know, this is genius, and it's perfect, and it embodies the cool, it describes the cool, it's beautifully done, and I feel really proud that I'm, you know, able to publish something like it in the collection. So, yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite pieces.
So how did
I'm
you decide
you
who
that's
was
fantastic.
Going in? Oh, I'm glad. That's good. That's great. How did you decide who was going to be in the book, or who did you, you know, what was your criteria for approaching certain people?
Well, the book started as I write about it a little bit in my introduction, but I started putting it together really when I saw that picture of Obama during the campaign in 2008, and he was getting out of the town car, and he had his shades on, and mm-hmm. he ended up being on the cover of Ebony, and the title is like, you know, Black Cool Incarnate or something like that. And I was really interested in unpacking what the elements of Black Cool are. So what does it mean that that is so cool? Why is that image so cool? Why is he so cool in that image? And I wanted to connect that to a larger African-American aesthetic, and then even further than that, connect it to an African diasporic aesthetic, and connect it to some of the work I did when I was in college and studying with Robert Ferris Thompson and Sylvia Boone, who are art historians and anthropologists who were instrumental in connecting the cultural and aesthetic legacy of West Africa and West African culture as it has been transmitted throughout the world via slave trade and migrations of Black people. So when I saw that image, I was like, you know, there's got to be some African encoding going on here, and I'd like to translate that and figure out what our legacy is telling us about cool. And so one of the things that came, you know, through loud and clear was the first, you know, one of the elements is audacity. And when mm-hmm. you look at almost everything that we think of as cool, Black cool, it's got this element of audacity. And what's more audacious than, you know, Black man running for president, a multiracial man running for president, a man with a Muslim name running for president, you know, of the United States of America. Reserve is another element that I really wanted to focus on, that kind of calm, collected, almost like a mask. And that's something Thompson and Boone, my mentors, identified both cool and funky as concepts and words even that came out of West African culture. So one of the literal definitions of cool from Yoruba is the word is itutu, and it has a kind of, it means compassion, and it means sort of spiritual grace in the face of any kind of obstacle. And so Obama to me in that moment is manifesting itutu, that kind of cool equanimity and restraint, you know, grace.
Right.
So anyway,
right.
Helena Andrews wrote that, yeah.
Right.
Have you talked to her?
No, I haven't, but I would love to have her on the show if you put in a good word for me.
Of course. She's a wonderful young writer. She wrote a book called Bitches the New Black, and she's developing it into a feature with Shonda Rhimes, who's, you know, fantastic. And I'm really happy that they're doing that, because the book is great, and because it's great to see older Black women, you know, mentoring younger Black women and working together in that way. But anyway, you asked me a very different question than the one I just answered. So you asked me.
No, you answered about your starting of the book, and then so now, like, what was your criteria and things of that nature? And
So I picked people. You know, so I came up with a list of different elements that I feel embody the cool, or that the cool is comprised of these elements. And then I started looking out at the landscape and some of my favorite writers, and thought about who could handle different subjects. And, you know, I've been editing pieces and collections for a long time, and I read a lot, and I like to think that I have a good sense of what different writers bring to the table. And so a lot of it was just, you know, no-brainers. You know, when I wanted a piece about audacity, Dream Hampton was the first person that came to mind. When I wanted a piece about style and fashion and what the Black cool aesthetic has done to, you know, to global sartorial or fashion aesthetics, of course, Michaela Angela Davis came to mind immediately.
Mm-hmm.
When I wanted a piece about Black geek or intellectual passion, as I like to call it, Matt Johnson, the novelist who wrote Pym came immediately to mind.
I want to read a little piece of his, Matt's
okay.
piece, because I grew up with Matt. I knew back from back in the day. So, but go ahead.
I love Matt. Oh my God, love that boy. He is so beautiful. That man.
Wait, he is so funny, right? Oh my God. When I saw that he was in your book, I started cracking up and talking about he was a geek. Let me tell you, I didn't think Matt was a geek. And just between you, me, and all the 50 other million people that might download the show. I used to have this huge crush on Matt, and I did not think that he was a geek, but then I was a geek, so what do I know, you know what I mean?
Well, the whole idea is that geek element is actually part of cool, so it makes sense you didn't think of him as a geek, because geek is actually cool within a black paradigm, and geek
right.
suggests a kind of, you know, intellectual commitment and passion about something that people might not think is cool in a kind of old sort of, you know, shallow idea of what cool is, but that actually cool engages the mind in a very profound way. So I could see how you wouldn't think of him as a geek, and that's part of it, because he was really cool, I bet.
Well, let me read a little from his piece here, because it's a little funny part. This is Matt Johnson. You guys should check him out. Oh, God, he's so, oh, my God, hardcore satire type of good dude. But anyway, one day on the schoolyard, I saw Alex walking around with his head stuck in a magazine. Immediately, I ran over to see what it was, because the only magazines I'd seen kids bring to school were nudie magazines, and I just knew I was going to get to see an image of fully developed mammaries. Ugh, sorry. One of the thug kids saw the magazine, too, and saw me running and joined in behind me. When we got there, I asked, "What you reading?" Alex, annoyed, held up the cover for me to see, The Economist. The Negro was reading The Economist right there on the do-or-die lot of Henry H. Houston Elementary? The thug who had followed me pulled it out of Alex's hand, flipped through the whole thing, and said, "Ain't got no kind of pictures? What? You just reading the read?" And threw it back. I was on the floor. I was on the floor when he said The Economist. I was cracking up, okay? But one of the things he also talked about was, you know, his love of comic books in there, and being in the store and who he saw in the store, and, you know, being, you know, proud about who he was, and eventually being proud about who he was. But also at the end, the saying for others, don't be afraid of who you are. That is cool. Like, your uniqueness or your interest may be actually really cool, and you should be proud of it.
Yes, and that it's not the thing that is cool is the intensity of your interest. To have that kind of rigor and passion about something, almost anything. Is to go deep into a subject, to sink into it, and to allow your mind to wander and process and really trust in the intellectual journey that your mind is telling you to take. And that is cool, you know. And when we think about different artists like Miles Davis, who's also Miles Marshall Lewis writes about Miles Davis in the book, but Miles is a good example of a deep intellect, you know, and he was never happy to just stay at one place. He kept going. He was deep into his music, even when people thought it was not cool, when they wanted him to stay at Kind of Blue or Birth of the Cool, or, you know, he was like, no, I'm so into this, I'm going to take it out to Bitches Brew, I'm going to take it out to all these different sounds that you've never heard before. And even though people didn't get it, you know, later on we understand that he was on a journey, and that's what made him so cool and so iconic and so much a part of our culture, you know, in this profound way. So I think Matt's really touching on that, just the idea of allowing our minds to go deep, you know.
Yes. Well, another piece I could relate to was Rachel Harper's piece. She was talking about her father being an artist, being a poet, and my stepfather, I grew up with, he was a visual artist, and I really connected with not bothering the father while he was creating, you know, listening to the music and the things that influence us as we grow up, what we think are cool. Like when I grew up, my dad was listening to Pat Metheny. So when I got older, I met Pat Metheny. I was like shaking, and I met a lot of people. But I, for some reason, Pat Metheny got me tongue tied. You know, jazz was cool to me. You know, but that wasn't cool when I went on the playground. They didn't even know what that was. But also art was cool to me, and being into art and art museums and going to see theater and listening to music. And I remember my parents took me to see Sun Ra. Crazy. You know, my parents were crazy.
I love it.
But that's something you talk about throughout the book. Different pieces. People bring up the issue of crazy artists. Does artists have to be crazy? Does artists have to be crazy and depressed and moody? But that's what we love about artists. What do you feel about that? Do artists have to be crazy and depressed and moody for us to love their work and then for them to break boundaries?
That's so interesting. She's been out with me on the last three book signings and readings here in L.A. because she lives in L.A. We're talking about Rachel Harper, who's a great novelist, young writer. She wrote a great book called Brass Ankle Blues about a young girl growing up biracial. She's the daughter of the amazing world-renowned poet Michael Harper. And so she's writing about her relationship with him and how he was cool. And so, you know, it's a good question. I think that we are all, in my generation, our generation, trying not to be that, depressed, intense artist. You know, we're trying to kind of, like, have lives and have balance. And, you know, but she talks about, I love that piece, and you should hear her read it. Oh my God, she read it last night at the reading, and it was so beautiful. I think when you grow up with a writer parent, I think we have that in common. You grow up at readings, you know, and you watch your mother or your father do their thing, you know, night after night.
Mm-hmm.
You just get it by osmosis, and she tore it up. But I think her piece is really about. It's called Crazy. I renamed all the pieces because I wanted the book to be like a glossary of cool or a dictionary of cool. So I stripped down all the titles to the elements. And she takes great exception to this decision I made, and she has a whole other title. But she's really talking about a lot of different things. But the title is referring to the way that sometimes in Black vernacular, in the way that we talk and the way we look at things, we can say, like, man, that was crazy. And her father used to say that all the time. You know, that was that show or that film or that artist or that whatever, that was crazy. And he didn't mean it was crazy insane. He meant that that person was so committed and so out, like so just out with their stuff that it was both cool and crazy. You know, it was like walking that line between sanity and insanity. And, and so she's really kind of exploring that idea. My hope, obviously, is that, you know, we can be stable and calm and great and happy and be great artists. But I do have to say that I have yet to meet an artist that is not deeply complex in some way. So, yeah. So I'm glad you brought that piece up. It's another. They're all my favorites, but again, that's another real favorite.
Some of the pieces, Bell Hooks talks about Black men and their battle with what it means to be cool. And then also there's another piece in there. I forget who wrote it. There's a woman who wrote the piece about young women and their I guess the reserve and the mask that we kind of have to wear. Do you feel that young people are still stuck in cool being bad, badass, you know, gun-toting, you know, I'll shoot you before you shoot me? Or do you feel that young kids now are going in a different direction and more laid back? What do you see the direction of the youth today with what it means to be cool?
I think that one of the main reasons that I decided to do this book is that I feel like, and Hank Willis Thomas writes about this a lot. He's a visual artist. He writes in the book about this. But, you know, in the last, definitely in our generation, the idea of cool, Black cool, has been commodified and sort of sold back to young people as being something that you can buy, being about, you know, wearing the right sneakers or the bling or driving the car or being, as Belle is referring to, being, like, so hard, you know, being emotionally shut down, being, you know, exactly what you said, I'll shoot you before you shoot me. And I wanted to do this book to show, you know, young people especially, that being cool, when you really look at it in terms of the African tradition, the legacy of blackness that is around the world has nothing to do with that. That real cool has to do with compassion. It has to do with doing the right thing. It has to do with soul. It has to do with beauty. It has to do with family. It has to do with posse. It has to do with style. You know, it's not this repurposed product of a multi-billion-dollar industry. It's something that's much deeper and much more beautiful and profound, and it actually has within it tools that we can use for our survival as a people, not our destruction. And I think that a lot of these kind of tropes of cool that have been sold back to folks really are about destruction, you know, this hardened thing, whereas these other elements of cool are what have kept us alive and human through, you know, unbearable circumstances. So,
well,
yeah,
the funny thing is,
I wanted to give the book to them. You know, that's why I told my publishers,
yeah,
I want this book to be, like, in Urban Outfitters, and I want it to be in, you know, places where young people are, and, you know, I want to try to make sure it's taught in schools and like that. So.
Well, I mean, the good thing about the book, and that I really appreciate, is that it's giving a variety of views, because a lot of times you may be the only black person in the class, you may be the only black person in the boardroom, even still today, yes, it still happens. You could be the only woman still today in this situation. And you are expected to speak for every person, every black person, you know. People will look to you, so, like, is that what you guys would do? And you're like, I don't know, you know. One of the things, you know, when I was growing up, I'm light-skinned, so I had to deal with the battle of, you know, you're light-skinned and, you know, maybe you're uppity or whatever. But another issue is religion for black people, you know, what it means to be, you know, going to church, wearing your coolest outfit to church, the hats and the dresses and, you know, all that stuff. Well, I went to church very rarely. I was actually a Buddhist growing up. So, but I'm still black. I still consider myself black, you know. And but I just didn't sit in the box that people had for what it meant to be black, you know. When you were growing up, were there any boxes you feel you didn't fit into, Rebecca?
That's so funny. I didn't fit in any boxes. you know, as a multiracial person, as a very, I don't know, what do you call it? I mean, I was very, as a young person, I was both kind of confrontational about my political views with, you know, I did not mince words. I was always talking about something and how people needed to see things differently. But at the same time, I was also very much a reclusive young person. I still am. I like to be at home. I'm a reader. I'm a thinker. And so I kind of straddled. I was never sort of a social person where you just go to the party and hang out. So I didn't fit into kind of normal social stuff. I was at home or I was in your face. I wasn't black enough sometimes. I wasn't white enough ever. You know, so there was all that going on. And then I was, as any of you who've read Black, White, and Jewish, my first memoir, know, I was always going back and forth between New York and San Francisco after my parents divorced and moving between a lot of different worlds and felt like I was an outsider almost all the time. And, you know, and then as again, I started studying Buddhism maybe 20 years ago now, and that also, in some ways, in some communities, made me feel like an outsider. But I think, you know, at this point, I just don't even think about boxes anymore. I just move through the world. And if people have boxes, I systematically, with my being, you know, break through them. I really don't have any time for other people's ideas or categories or concerns about what I think or who I am anymore. And that you know, that took time to reach that place, but, you know, I feel like I was buoyed and supported by, you know, these elements of cool, really. Authenticity, mm-hmm. audacity, intellectual passion, you know, grace, eclecticism, you know, the things that, that have been given to me through this legacy have helped me to find that kind of freedom and peace with myself. So, you know, ashe, as Valerie Thomas said in the reading last night.
Well,
her piece is brilliant, too. So,
there's so many good pieces, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show, and that's why I'm giving away some copies of your book. And let me talk about Black Cool. Okay, I love the ring in the picture. Okay, the picture of you. That's Black Cool right there. I want the ring. Why are you playing with us? That's what I want to say. Why are you playing? You know we want the ring now.
That is so funny. One of my dear friends said, you know, I don't know about that picture because it's all about the ring. Are people even going to know it's you because it's about the ring? I'm like, no, baby, it's about me and the ring. We're in a relationship. But, yeah, isn't that a great ring? I got that ring in Mexico, in San Miguel de Allende, in this little shop with all this beautiful stuff. I wish I remember the name of the artist who made it. But it had its horn. It's I don't know what kind of horn it is.
It's from an animal? It's some kind of animal horn?
Animal horn. A dead animal, obviously. The animal wasn't killed for the horn. But it's beautiful, and thank you for noticing it, because it is. It's about the way we wear things, and that's definitely part of my blackness right up in there.
Yeah. I'm going to actually see Tracy Reed. She's a black designer. And New York Fashion Week tomorrow. There's so few out there that people are aware of, but she's one of the ones at the top there, Tracy Reese. And we have this issue, I think, continually, I don't know if it will continue forever and ever, of owning our coolness. That's one of the things Michaela talks about, and not giving it away freely, you know. Also in the book, other people talk about the consumerism. But, you know, historically, being too cool and the swag piece at the end could have got you killed, you know. And back in the day, if you were too cool, if you had too much swag, you know, if we think about Jack Johnson, the boxer, yo, that's Black cool, you know. And then now today we have Barack Obama, and definitely he exemplifies cool and calm, reserve, but joy and love, you know, all at the same time. So I think that speaks to what you said earlier. Not the violent aspect of being cool, but the more deep, I guess, inner spiritual thing. And Jamal Joseph, who was on earlier, was talking about that kind of transformation that he made to almost his type of cool. He had a cool in the beginning with the Black Panthers, but then by the end, he had a different cool with the arts. And arts are very important. You talk about that. Do you think arts really helped you in your life to get you where you are today?
Art mm-hmm. saved my life, definitely. I mean, I don't think I would be here without art. Because art is possibility. Art is what feeds the spirit. Art shows us the world in different ways and shows us that we can see the world in different ways and create it in different ways. And I mean, for me, art is like food, you know. But what you just said. Well, first of all, I love Tracy Reese. I love her work. Give her a major shout from me if you talk to her. And I would love to send her a copy of the book. I know Michaela mentions her, I think, in her long lineup of amazing black designers. And
mm-hmm.
I look forward to wearing some Tracy Reese soon. So
tell
her
I'll
to
drop that note.
tell her we need to have a moment, you know. But but this idea of the spiritual element of transformation that came up in one of the readings the other night, this idea of Malcolm and how cool people thought Malcolm was when he was in his more militant role within the nation, but then how people kind of had a different view of him when he went to Mecca and he had that spiritual transformation and he became a more enlightened, one would say, being, and that fits in with what we were talking about how kid or how, you know, black cool is this tough thing, this militant, violent, you know, potential has been so pushed in the culture, and yet the more spiritually aligned Black cool has been suppressed, when in fact, again, if you look at the origins of Black cool, if you look at the African tradition, the Afro-Atlantic tradition, what you find is that the epitome of Black cool is this kind of grace and humanistic, enlightened, spiritual state of being. So
definitely.
I'm glad that you brought that up. I think that's really important. And yes, art, you know, I think all good art, well, the art that I respond to really almost always has some kind of spiritual component. It has a resonance of a bigger humanity, you know.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. We've run out of time today, but if you're listening, check out Black Cool, 1,000 Streams of Blackness by Rebecca Walker. Follow her on Twitter at Rebecca Walker. Also check out her website, RebeccaWalker.com. Thank you, thank you, and thank you for being on the show again. You guys, she was on the show earlier in the 2010 about her book, One Big Happy Family, so you can look that up and listen to that interview. We were talking about her book. But thank you. And I will mention to Tracy Reese.
wait. Mention me to Tracy Reese. Folks need to follow me on Facebook, do the Twitter thing, and
also,
if you're on the East Coast, come out and hear me and Michaela talking at the Schomburg on the 14th. We're having a banging after party at a fabulous spot after that, so come and do that moment. We'll be at McNally Jackson, me and Margot Jefferson, who's in the book, and Miles Marshall Lewis on the 15th, so come out for that. In D.C., we'll be at Bus Boys and Poets on the 17th.
Bus Boys, yay!
Yay! With all kind of crazy genius people. Helena Andrews is going to be there. Jonica Reed, who's like an incredible cool hunter, global traveler. Jamila Bennu, who's the founder of Oyin Handmade Products, who's like a genius. And I think that event is going
to
be off the hook. So
Please go to the Schomburg, too, because Khalil, who was on the show, is the director up there at the Schomburg, Khalil Gibran Muhammad. He was on the show talking about his book, The Condemnation of Blackness. But definitely go support the Schomburg.
Oh, yeah, and I think it's just going to be fun, you know, just fun, and it'll feed your mind and your soul, and we all love to see you, you know. We love to see the people, all y'all, our people.
All people, so Black cool people, got in the house. All right, thank you so much, Rebecca, for coming on. It was a pleasure talking with you, and much success with the book.
Thank you, honey. You take care. It's great to be here.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, check her out at the Schomburg. Check her out at Bus Boys and Poets. That's a great little place in D.C. My mom lives down there. And, again, check out the other interview I did with her about One Big Happy Family. You can follow me on Twitter.com/JoyKeys. Become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. My email is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Have a wonderful weekend. Love you. Since it's Valentine's Day, you got to say that. Got to shout out for love. Peace.